fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to Croatia and Real Madrid midfielder Luka Modric, who won the Ballon d'Or trophy in Paris as the best male footballer of 2018.
I would change my all individual awards for World Cup. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. Even this success that we achieved at the World Cup is for such a small country as Croatia is something amazing. But I would, like I told you, I would change all of this for World Cup. But how it didn't happen, this is great feeling to win at least this, and very happy for it.
Luka Modric, captain Croatia to this year's World Cup final in Moscow, where Croatia lost 4-2 to France. Luka also helped Real Madrid win the 2018 UEFA Champions League trophy. In winning the Ballon d'Or, Modric ended the long reign of Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo, who had won every Ballon d'Or since 2008. Modric comments.
These two were on some exceptional level last 10 years. Maybe in the past, there are some players that could won Ballon d'Or, like Xavi, Iniesta, or, I don't know, Schneider. But it didn't happen, and people now are finally, I don't know, they wanted to look something else. And I think it's victory of football tonight, and I'm happy that I am the winner. But this award is for all these players as well that probably deserve to win, and they didn't.
And let's give another Sunny Side of Sports salute to striker Ada Hegerberg of Norway and the French club Olympique Lyon, who won the inaugural Women's Ballon d'Or trophy.
I mean, I think this is a fantastic day for women's football in general. It's historical. It's a big step forward for women's football to have this award, and that's why you need to take the moment to really cherish it and show the importance of pushing younger girls to pursue their dreams.
Still with women's football, the Super Falcons of Nigeria pursued their dreams and successfully defended their African title in Accra, Ghana. The Nigerian women edged South Africa 4-3 on penalty kicks in the final on December 1st. Among those watching the match in Ghana's capital was Nigerian sports journalist Okpotola Adewole of Score magazine. Our friend in Accra, Kwabena Quicksilver Ofori, asked him how he felt during the tense penalty kick shootout.
I was indifferent because I think that it's going to be a win-win situation for Africa if it goes either way. You know, the most important thing is to have picked the World Cup ticket at stake, and that's exactly where South Africa and Nigeria are. And I just think that the final was going to be a bonus, although there is always this rivalry between Nigeria and South Africa. But because of the fact that penalties are always a lottery, I felt that it could have gone either way, and indeed, it could have gone either way.
Your next is the World Cup in France. That's 2019. How is it going to be for Nigeria?
Well, I think preparation is key. Without preparation, I do not think that any of these African sides will make an impact at the World Cup, because we can still see that the standards still falls a little bit short of expectations. The World Cup is still a long time from now. We are looking at about another 7 months. A lot of things can change in football in 7 months. So I just want to advise the administrators of the qualified African teams to ensure that they give the teams quality-friendly games. And, of course, they allow a longer camping period for the girls to understand themselves and put into play whatever strategy and tactics the coaches are teaching them. I still think that perhaps Africa still has a long way to go, actually.
You are in Accra enjoying the day. But what do you think about your soccer fans in Nigeria, especially in Lagos, concerning this victory?
I must confess to you that the women's game does not really command that much followership where you compare it to the men's game. So I must say to you that it will not be out of place if so many people are not even aware that a competition of this magnitude has been on for 2 weeks. But the only good side about it is that there is more awareness now. We don't have total awareness, but there is more awareness compared to the past. And going by what I've been seeing on the social media and all, it's been buzzing, I must say. It's been buzzing. So it's still a good one. It's still a good one all around for Nigeria.
For the next World Cup, do you think Nigeria can place well in the competition in France?
Well, I think I was really disappointed about what happened 3 years ago in Canada, because having finished as runners-up at the Under-20 Women World Cup in 2011, the Under-20 Women World Cup in 2014, I was expecting Nigeria to put up a stronger opposition against other teams from the world, particularly against the Europeans and the South Americans. But the team didn't qualify from the group stage. It was a big disappointment for me, because I felt that those players who made it to the final of the 2011 Women World Cup and the 2014 Women World Cup should have come to the party at the big stage. But I think now they have come of age, so it might just be a last-minute hurrah for the team come France 2019. If the team fails this time around to go beyond the group stage, then I think that the future might not really be so bright, because the team have not been doing well at the youth level between 2014 and 2018. I was in France this year at the 2020 Women World Cup. The team progressed to the quarterfinals, but the standard of play was nothing to write home about. Yeah. So I just think that for a golden generation, France 2019 might just be the last opportunity for them to really, really make an impression on the world stage, on the biggest stage.
Good. Now we have three countries representing Africa, Cameroon, Nigeria, and South Africa. How do you think about their technical and tactical abilities?
Undoubtedly, I think that these are the three best footballing nations in Africa. Talk about the women's game. Cameroon lost to Nigeria in the final in the last two editions, in Namibia and in Cameroon. The last one, albeit a very painful one, because it was the final dominated by Cameroon, but Nigeria showed their experience. So when you look at three teams going this time around, Cameroon, Nigeria, South Africa, you want to say that this is the best of the best from Africa. The Ghanaians were very disappointing, despite the fact that they were playing on home soil. But that is football for you. It does happen. It's for them to pick up the pieces and try again next time. But for the ones that have qualified, just like I've said earlier on, now it's time for them to make Africa proud.
Were you happy with the organization?
Well, I think that the Ghanaians did their best. Honestly speaking, I think this is one of the best organized competitions. The crowd attendance fell short a little bit, because I think I saw better crowd attendances at the last edition in Cameroon. But I love the state of the pitches. I love the way they organized it. I love every other thing. It's just that the fans really didn't turn up as much as we expected.
That's Nigerian sports journalist Okpotola Adewole of Score magazine. He spoke with reporter Kwabena Quicksilver-Ofori in Accra, Ghana. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. The Confederation of African Football, CAF, recently stripped Cameroon of the hosting rights to the 2019 Africa Cup of Nations tournament. Our Voice of America football fans will remember this will be the first Nations Cup expanded from 16 to 24 teams. The competition is scheduled from June 15th to July 13th, 2019. CAF mentions security and Cameroon's poor preparations as reasons for its decision. Now, CAF has already approached South Africa, which staged the Nations Cup in 1996 and 2013, to bid again to host. South Africa is also the only African country to host the World Cup, having done so in 2010. For reaction to the CAF decision, reporter Iron Mike Mbonye spoke with the editor-in-chief of the Lagos-based website, SportsVillageSquare.com, Kunle Salaja.
Well, the decision has long been coming. It didn't really come as a surprise, because if you look at the body language and everything, you know that decision was coming to the fact that Cameroon would be stripped of that hosting right for two reasons. This is the first expanded format of the African Nations Cup. Originally, it was for 16 teams. When the hosting right was awarded about 3-4 years ago, it was for 16 countries. Midway, it's now changed to 24, which is additional responsibility to the host country. And besides that, the host country is still battling to meet the requirement for 16 countries, then you expanded it to 24. So that gives some problem. But beyond that, there are other issues. That are politically inclined. You also remember that Ayatu, the former CAF president, under whose tenure that hosting right was awarded, stripped Madagascar the hosting right for the under-17 African tournament of 2017. And somehow, people are trying to read in between the lines that, okay, could it be a retaliation that, okay, if you strip my country of the hosting right, then I do that for you too.
SAFA, the South African Football Association, say the Confederation of African Football has already approached them to consider making a bid to host. What's your reaction to this?
Well, that has always been the tradition. When the hosting right is withdrawn from one country, or when you are about to do that, usually organizations always have two strings on their pole. If you put down this flag, you must be ready to raise another one. So this is not the first time such will happen. As a matter of fact, the 2013 edition was originally for Libya, but because of the political situation in Libya, they went to South Africa. And South Africa is one of the few African countries that have the facilities already in place. So it's just a matter of logistics and then you move in. So I think that is why South Africa has been approached to host the tournament again, having hosted in 2013 and having even hosted a more elaborate competition, the World Cup 2010. So automatically they are the ones to be approached.
In the past, it's been noted that some countries in Africa have problems hosting the AFCON tournament and inability to meet CAF's deadline. What's your take on this?
It's a regular event. Even the one hosted by Nigeria in 1980 was originally meant for Senegal. Senegal actually won the bid in Ethiopia in 1976, beating Nigeria to it. And along the line, Senegal was unable to host, so Nigeria hosted. The 1994 edition, which was hosted in Tunisia, was originally for Zaire, which is now DR Congo. The outbreak of violence in that country that led to the enthronement of Mobutu and the enthronement of the present dynasty, it was the reason why that hosting right was moved from Zaire to Tunisia. The one that was even held in 2015, it was originally for Morocco, but because of Ebola outbreak and the qualification of Guinea and the fear that Guinean fans will bring Ebola into their territory, Morocco pulled out. And that's how the thing was co-hosted by Equatorial Guinea and Gabon. And as at that time, even before they stripped Morocco of that hosting right, CAF had already approached the governments of those two countries and they've agreed. So they were just waiting for the appropriate time to make the announcement. And the same thing is just what has happened now.
That's Kunle Salaja, the editor-in-chief of the website sportsvillagesquare.com. And Kunle spoke with reporter Iron Mike Mbonye in Lagos, Nigeria. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. It's time to climb between the ropes once again with our reigning prince of pugilistics, Nnamdi Hollywood Moeta. Good evening, Nnamdi.
And a good evening, Sonny.
First off, props to our prince of pugilistics. Nnamdi, you said Wilder Fury would be a 50-50 fight. And sure enough, a split decision draw. Let's go to the scorecards. One judge had it 115 to 111 in favor of WBC heavyweight champion Deontay Wilder. Another 114 to 112 for Fury. And the third had it even at 113 to 113. That third judge, Nnamdi, proving controversial?
The third judge was Tyson Fury's judge from the UK, Sonny. Phil Edwards was flown into Los Angeles to do a job to protect the UK fighter, scoring the fight 113-113. Now the Tyson camp have decided to file a protest against him with the British Boxing Board of Control. So we can blame all the judges, but the man that was flown in from the UK to do a job, he failed the fighter from the UK.
What's your take on the scoring, Namdi? Some said even with the two knockdowns that Deontay Wilder had, that Fury still won the fight.
Sonny, it depends on the way you look at the fight. Some people said 8 rounds to Tyson Fury, 4 rounds to Deontay Wilder. Other people said 9 rounds to Fury, 3 rounds to Deontay Wilder. But you have to understand, Sonny, when you look at the fight closely, some of those rounds were very close. Some of those rounds could have gone either way. To make matters worse, those TV boxing commentators were just all over the place, and they were scoring the fight, and this brought in a whole lot of uproar. It's different when you watch this fight closely in the arena. I was there. I was ringside. And it was a fight that there was no way you could just take the fight away from these two guys, Sonny. I am very happy with the draw, and I'm very happy that both guys remain undefeated. And then we can see another fight in the 2019, Sonny.
What about that 12th round knockdown, Namdi? Did you think Tyson Fury would get up?
Sonny, that 12th round was a hard fall. Any other referee will have stopped the fight. I mean, go back and look at the way he was out cold. But the fact that he got off the deck, Sonny, not only getting off the deck, but he mounted an attack against Deontay Wilder, where he ran his combination. He almost stole that round, Sonny, the 12th round. I have never seen any fighter in my life. I've been in this game for more than 30 years. This is the first time I see a man coming up and then fighting back.
With Fury getting up, Namdi, did you gain new respect for him?
Oh, millions of fight fans all over the world. Apart from just getting off the floor, the story behind this fight, all the things he went through, drug addiction, suicide thoughts, I mean, drinking, all the stuff, and losing. Remember, Sonny, going into camp 2 years ago, this cat weighed 400 pounds, Sonny. 400 pounds. And then he left his wife and children in the UK, moved to Big Bear, trained in LA. Talking about commitment, man. You have no choice but to root for him. And he's a fun guy to watch, a fun guy at press conference, a fun guy to listen to. So boxing finally got the mojo back with the Gypsy King in action. Tyson Fury is in the driver's seat right now. He can dictate how much money he wants. He can decide he wants to come back to America or he wants to remain in the UK. He is a major draw right now, and the money for him is huge.
And speaking of the money, Namdi, talk about the gate for Wilder Fury.
Sonny, the gate was $17,655 at the Staples Center in Los Angeles. Remember, the arena holds 20,000. It was almost like a sellout. But before Saturday, tickets were moving slow until that press conference, all the fist fight at the press conference on Wednesday afternoon. That was when the fans went crazy. The pay-per-view numbers will improve. The money, Tyson Fury guaranteed $4 million. Deontay Wilder, $5 million guarantee. But on the back end, when we talk about pay-per-view, we talk about foreign TV rights. Now people are watching fights on their cell phone, streaming service, sponsorship money. When all that come back into the pot and then they split it, these fighters will be walking away with another extra $10 million apiece. So they should be going home with between $15 and $20 million apiece, which is not chicken change for heavyweight, Sonny.
Namdi, there were reports before the fight that Tyson Fury would donate his prize money to charity. He mentioned the homeless and the poor. Your reaction?
Come on, Sonny. A man just got off the deck after 12 hard rounds, and you want him to donate $10 to $15 million to charity. It's all PR talk, Sonny. Come on now. We know we're in the game. We're in the game. We know we got to sell tickets. The story's sweet. The sweet in the pot. How in the world you expect him after being knocked out and slapped around for 12 rounds, getting off the deck twice and turn around and hand over all this money to charity and some guy in an office will be paying himself? No, he'll give a couple of millions to charity. And then, hey, man, he's done a lot for mental illness. He's done a lot for addiction. What else do we want? Give all the parts? No, it's a PR stuff, Sonny.
Well, Namdi, Tyson Fury looked a lot bigger than Deontay Wilder in the ring. What were the weights for the two fighters?
This is where it still surprised me, because for the weigh-in on Friday, Tyson Fury weighed 256 pounds, Sonny. Deontay Wilder weighed 212 pounds. This is on Friday. So by fight night Saturday, Tyson Fury could have been in that ring weighing 270 pounds. I've always believed Deontay Wilder must put on at least another 20 more pounds. He has the frame. These heavyweights now, Anthony Joshua and all these cats, they come in huge. They come in big. If he puts in another 20 pounds, and being a puncher, if he knocks you down, you're going to stay down. For a heavyweight, he just 212 is just way too small. It should be at least 232 to 240.
What did Deontay Wilder do wrong in the fight?
He did a couple of things wrong. One, going into the fight, if you remember, we talked about fighting Tyson Fury inside. Remember, Tyson Fury is 6'9", and Deontay is 6'7". There's no point in being outside. And there was no way, if he had fought Tyson Fury inside, walk the body, break down the body, stay, run his combination, there was no way Tyson Fury could have moved for 12 rounds. He was unable to go inside. He was pushing the knockout, Sonny. A knockout artist always pushes for the knockout while the other guy is putting the rounds in the bank, Sonny. And he said it himself. He said, you know, I was forcing the knockout. You can't force the knockout. You got to let the knockout come naturally. And that was his huge mistake. And he looked very amateurish, Sonny. I mean, that was a boxing clinic by Tyson Fury. And for a world heavyweight champion to look the way he looked like an amateur, Sonny. I'm not going to lie about it.
Namdi, with this split decision draw, Tyson Fury seems to have some fight options available now in 2019. What's next for Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder?
Sonny, remember there's a rematch clause before this fight when they made the deal. The rematch clause means after the first fight, the next fight must be against, two guys must come together. But if he has to fight Tyson Fury, Tyson Fury wants him to come to the UK. And going to the UK with the judges, I don't see how Deontay Wilder can win in the UK. I think the smart move will be for Deontay Wilder to sit down with Anthony Joshua's people and break bread and go for the unification fight. All the belts will be on the table. For your information, Anthony Joshua's promoter, Eddie Hearn, will fly into Los Angeles this week. We're expecting him tomorrow to start breaking bread with Deontay Wilder's people. That fight with Deontay Wilder, they already have Wembley Stadium April 19th, 2019. If they can break bread, make that fight happen, it's a big fight. But if that cannot happen, expect Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury's people to start talking. And that fight at the Wembley Stadium, Tyson Fury against Anthony Joshua, it's a monster fight, Sonny.
Thanks, Namdi. That's our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moueta. And we'll hear more hard-hitting boxing commentary from Namdi later this week, right here on the Sunny Side of Sports. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Meanwhile, Namdi and the Sunny Side of Sports send prayers and good healing wishes to former world light heavyweight champion Adonis Stevenson of Canada. Stevenson is reported to be in stable condition at the University Hospital of Quebec in Canada after being knocked out in his light heavyweight title fight over the weekend in Quebec City. In a statement, the University Hospital of Quebec said, Stevenson is still in the intensive care unit. His condition remains stable. I talked to Namdi about this incident. Namdi says boxing is a dangerous sport. And Adonis Stevenson, we wish him well. We hope, Namdi says he hopes he never fights again. Stevenson, 41 years old, he was knocked out by the Russian Alexander Gavadzic in the 11th round of their World Boxing Council title fight. And now he is in intensive care, and we wish him well as he tries to get out of the hospital, Adonis Stevenson, former world light heavyweight champion. And that wraps up the December 3rd edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America. Let me say, it's December 4th. It's not December 3rd. It's December 4th. The December 4th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Thomas Blondet. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the role of political parties in Africa. Is there room for opposition political groups? Does the African citizen have a right to form an independent opinion? Those issues and more on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
This is Science in a Minute.
On August 21st, 2017, a total solar eclipse followed a northwest to southeast path across the United States. A number of researchers from various scientific disciplines used the solar eclipse to conduct experiments. Researchers at the University of Missouri put together a group of citizen scientists, along with elementary students and their teachers, to study how a solar eclipse affects bees. 16 acoustic monitoring stations were placed along the total eclipse path in Oregon, Idaho, and Missouri. The monitoring stations were placed in locations where bees would congregate, such as flower patches. As the total eclipse made its way over each monitoring station, the researchers listened for the sound of bees buzzing, or as they found out, not buzzing. During the periods of totality, the bees took a break from their daily routines. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
Ebola is not a curse or spiritual infection. It is a deadly disease, a fever spread by contact with the body fluids of infected people. I am Dr. Kande Greaves. Its symptoms start with a fever, fatigue, and muscle pain. Within a few days, vomiting and diarrhea sets in, and victims lose about 4 liters of body fluid each day. Ebola is highly infectious. If you experience any of these symptoms, seek medical help immediately. You must wash your hands regularly. Do not eat or handle bushmeat. Stay away from people suffering from Ebola. And do not handle the bodies of Ebola victims. If you have had contact with someone who has Ebola, you need to have your temperature monitored daily for any change. Early diagnosis and treatment is critical to your survival. Learn the facts about Ebola. Knowledge is life.
This was a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
Hello, this is James Butte, managing editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
VOA News is always at the tip of your fingers.
All the news you want about Africa and the world, day and night, is available on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
Make it your first source of news and information.